Well, hello, blockheads of the world. This is Paul Boyer. Welcome to the Mad Money Machine, Season 2. I am so glad that you joined me once again. It's Friday, May the 16th, and you know what that means? Only 3 months until Costco starts putting Christmas stuff out for sale.
Broadcasting from the Bitcoin bunker, 6 blocks below, brandishing the blockchain to fight good versus evil. This is Bitcoin versus the man. This is the battle of the century. This is the Mad Money Machine.
I am so glad to be back at the Mad Money Machine microphone here at the Mad Money Machine corporate towers in the MMM Business Park. It is great to be here with you once again. I've got a lot to get to, and I'm looking forward to the new season of the Mad Money Machine. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me over this short break between Season 1 and Season 2. I'm glad you didn't get lost, and I'm glad you're still here with me. And if you're like me, and I know I am, then you've probably been to a lot of social events over the past few weeks. You've seen some old friends at various parties and things. And they, you know, when you first saw them months or so ago, you told them about how you were into Bitcoin, and you talked about it. That was back in the heyday, back in November, when it was going up to $1,000 or so, and everybody was talking about Bitcoin. Well, now you see them again. You're at a party, and you start talking about Bitcoin, and they ask you a few questions. Now I present to you the Bitcoin Party Quiz. So you're at a party. Old friend who knows you're into Bitcoin sees you, starts talking about Bitcoin, and they ask, "So I heard about that Bitcoin company that collapsed the other day. What's that all about?" Your answer is A. Yeah, Mt. Gox is gone, but better exchanges are taking its place, so Bitcoin will be just fine. Or B. Well, there is no single Bitcoin company, but companies can fail and Bitcoin goes on. Also, Bitcoin is more than just a currency. It's a technological innovation that created a decentralized ledger that can't be changed. Or C, yeah, it was fun while it lasted, but Bitcoin is gone and you won't be hearing any more about it or any other cryptocurrencies in the future. Well, you're at a party, and an old friend who knows you're into Bitcoin sees you, and you start talking about Bitcoin, and they ask, "Well, why are Bitcoins worth anything? They're just bits." You answer, A, yeah, but they're very unique bits, and there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin ever made. Or B, yeah, just like any asset, people are willing to trade dollars to buy it, and the asking price of sellers fluctuates, sometimes quite dramatically. Or C, I don't know why they're worth anything. Why is Twitter stock worth anything? Well, you're at a party and an old friend who knows you're into Bitcoin sees you and you start talking about Bitcoin and they ask, "Can't Bitcoins just be copied? What's to stop somebody from just making a copy?" Your answer, A, no, the system checks to make sure that the Bitcoin address has enough value before it validates a transaction. Or B, no, because the blockchain, which stores the amount of Bitcoin each address holds, cannot be changed. Because validating a block of transactions by finding the right hash value takes so much work. Or C, yeah, that could happen if somebody took over the majority of Bitcoin nodes on the network, which is called a 51% attack. Well, you're at a party and an old friend who knows you're into Bitcoin sees you and you start talking about Bitcoin and they ask, "Why would I ever be interested in owning any Bitcoin?" A, well, do you ever want to do any online gambling? Or B, you can send money through the internet without a trusted third party. Or C, well, Bitcoins are $450 now, and it's going to $450,000, and then it's going to the moon. You're at a party, and an old friend who knows you're into Bitcoin sees you, and you start talking about Bitcoin, and they ask, "So I've heard Bitcoin's going to change the world. How's that?" Your answer, A, it's going to do for money what email did for letters. Or B, the reason the Bitcoin technology is potentially so disruptive and transformative is that it's a new efficient form of money, and money, which has been inexplicably ignored by mainstream economists for so long, is, of course, at the heart of almost everything we do. Bitcoin could change the way we make and receive payment. It could change the way we store money. It even has the potential to change the actual money we use. Or C, yeah, someday it's going to replace the dollar and it'll be a universal world reserve currency. Well, you're at a party and an old friend who knows you're into Bitcoin sees you and you start talking about Bitcoin and they ask, "Hey, how's that Bitcoin show of yours going?" You answer, A, "Great, season 2 is just underway." Or B, "Great, lots of people are commenting on how much they like the show." Or C, "Actually not so great. Nobody is donating any significant money to help support the show." Let's turn our attention now to some items of news, some items about Bitcoin in the news. Here's one from a few weeks ago, since the last episode of the Mad Money Machine. Fox News reports, Department of Defense to study Bitcoin as possible terrorist threat. A division within the Department of Defense is investigating whether the digital currency Bitcoin is a possible terrorist threat. And I think they've gone a little too far here. And the actual article is in Bitcoin Magazine. Brian Cohen published the article. U.S. Navy preparing Bitcoin Battalion. And I'm scrolling down a little bit. He says that the Technical Support Working Group, the TSWG, of the Combating Terrorism Technical Support Office, the CTTSO, which I imagine they pronounce CITSO, for the Navy Engineering Logistics Office, which it would be the NELO or the NELO, of the Department of Navy, which I suppose would just be Navy. So the TSWG of the CTTSO or CITSO of the NELO of the Navy has put out a BAA for, which is a broad agency announcement, in the FBO, the Federal Business Opportunities listing for Counter Threat Finance. And it's R3861. This requirement is for innovative materiel and non-materiel solutions, which is, I mean, doesn't that take every possible solution into consideration? Therefore, why even say it? Materiel and non-materiel solutions. Be like saying, we're looking for expensive and inexpensive solutions. Or it's like saying, we're looking for large solutions and non-large solutions to develop and or enhance new concepts and constructs for understanding the role of virtual currencies in threat finance. The world's population grew by more than a billion people between 2010 and 2013, and by 2020, the number of internet users is expected to double. Radical connectivity is blurring national lines and facilitating the transfer of virtual currency between otherwise disparate non-state actors. Non-state actor. All right. The introduction of virtual currency will likely shape threat finance by increasing the opaqueness, transactional velocity, and overall efficiencies of terrorist attacks. Who writes this stuff? This requirement will explore the unique and required skills necessary to understand and react to the rapidly evolving architecture of threat finance networks within a radically connected hybrid warfare context and will develop solutions to combat vulnerabilities posed by virtual currencies. And now the proposed solutions that they're looking for in this broad agency announcement include, but are not limited to, the following. First, identify relevant case studies from the last 20 years and explore how various funding instruments supported the flow of funds in support of threat finance networks. Determine the extent to which nature, trajectory, velocity, and decision-making supporting funds flows change with the introduction of virtual currencies into systems. So basically, this is basically writing a term paper. You know, here's the little question we're going to ask you. You write us a little term paper identifying relevant case studies from the last 20 years and exploring a bunch of things and putting out hypotheses. How much money are you going to get for writing this term paper, though? Unlike a college student who pays money to write the term paper, you, O contractor, are going to get money for writing this term paper. Basically, this is welfare for business students, business majors. The second proposed solution should consider: determine the types of red flags that have emerged during the introduction of virtual currencies. Determine how these warning signs are being incorporated into future efforts to track out ongoing funds flows supporting threat finance-based business models. Determine how virtual currencies might alter threat finance models and whether it is possible to predict changes in its architecture. Again, another, basically put together some PowerPoint slides for us and then write it all up in a little paper that you put in those little plastic binders, you know, with all the little plastic tongues that go through all the little holes in the side of the paper, and make it look real pretty for us, because at the end of 6 or 8 months, we want you to come in, brief us with your PowerPoint slides, hand over the paper, which we'll kind of thumb through, and then we'll put it on our shelf and award the next contract. Next proposed solution: determine how this information might be used to model and test the flow of funds using virtual currency for use both in predicting future attacks and in developing and deploying disruptive strategies to prevent them. So, you know, one question I would ask is, how many terrorist attacks have been funded by virtual currencies up to this point? Maybe that's the first study to actually put out there. Determine the number of terrorist attacks that have been funded through the use of virtual currencies, and why are virtual currencies so interesting to us as government agencies and their contractors in these various contracts and things. Well, the list goes on here of proposed solutions: developing beta test protocols for testing virtual currency risks, determine capabilities used to implement effective countermeasures to identify and mitigate terrorist threats. I can just imagine. Okay, so this is some sub-department of a sub-department of a sub-department of the Navy. And they've got a little bit of money. And the guys that are working in this department say, all right, what should we do next? You know, we finished that widget the other day. That project's done, and we still got some money left. What should we do? Well, we are the counter-terrorist organization. We are the combating terrorism technical support office. So what threats could there be out there that might be a little fun to work on? You know, there's Twitter. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Maybe we'll write up a contract about how social media could be used in terrorist threats. Yeah. All right. Oh, Bitcoin. I know. I'd like to work on Bitcoin. Okay. Yeah, Joe. Why don't you put out a broad agency announcement about some kind of Bitcoin-related study that we can have our contractors write up? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that'd be fun. So they're going to spend the money, you know, that they've got left over until the end of the fiscal year. And then, of course, the next fiscal year, they want to get the same amount of money that they got the previous fiscal year. And the cycle goes on, ever upward, spiraling out of control. And it's not just in this one sub-agency of a sub-agency of a sub-agency of the Navy, I'm sure. I bet it's in every sub-agency of every sub-agency of every sub-agency of every Department of the Defense. And then some. The federal tentacles are reaching ever wider into this fun thing called Bitcoin. All right, well, what else is in the news? Here's one from the University Herald by Scott Bickard, the University Herald reporter. Every MIT student to begin next semester with $100 in bitcoins. What type of economy will emerge? He writes, handing every undergraduate student $100 in bitcoins and watching them go Sounds like a plan for disaster at nearly every other institution besides MIT. Students at the technical college are used to handling projects beyond their years. They're also the ones who usually dream up such ideas. And he goes on to write about, you know, Facebook and the Winklevoss twins and all this sort of stuff. So next semester, every student, every undergrad at MIT is going to get $100 worth of Bitcoins. It turns out to be that they've got about 4,529 undergraduate students there. So that would be about $500,000. And they say in order to execute the plan, MIT had to adapt local and campus stores to accept Bitcoin. They're also bringing in Bitcoin representatives for an expo on May 3rd just to make sure students are as knowledgeable about the currency as they claim. Half of the money was provided by Alexander Morkos, a former student who started his own trading company. And the rest of the money was split between about 24 alumni, according to VentureBeat. He writes, what type of ecosystem will emerge? I'd imagine some students will be very careful in releasing their bitcoins, while others could use them as tantalizing bargaining chips. Likely, an unofficial that soon becomes official contest will emerge, tracking the students with the most bitcoins. When you step onto campus this fall, all of your classmates are going to have access to Bitcoin. What are you going to build to give them interesting ways to use it? Was the question asked. Well, indeed, it will be interesting to see what the MIT students come up with their $100 of Bitcoins. Although if you're an MIT student, I imagine $100 is quite insignificant compared to the tuition you have to pay just to get into the school. Also, here's something that happened within the last week. Did anyone notice that we went over block 300,000 in the Bitcoin blockchain? Yeah, for the past, since I've been watching it, we've been on a two handle, as they call it. 280,000th block, 290,000th block. Well, within the past week, we jumped over. We finally hit that 300,000th block chained together of transactions. You can go to blockchain.info, and right there you'll see the number of blocks emerging. It's got a 3 handle on it now. Congratulations, Bitcoin. You're 300,000 blocks old. Article in Coin Report. Roger Ver says he thinks Amazon will accept Bitcoin by the end of the year. I'll take you up on that bet, Roger Ver. I think they've already said they won't, and I'm pretty sure they'll stick to their guns on that one. I know Overstock is accepting it. I know Tiger Direct is accepting it. But Amazon has got its own ideas on how it wants to rule the world, and I believe Bitcoin is not a part of those plans. Here's one that crossed the news desk out of Coindesk.com. Winklevoss twins plan NASDAQ listing for Bitcoin ETF in a new SEC filing. Well, they did file, apparently, to have their exchange-traded fund listed on the NASDAQ stock exchange. And the article says if SEC gives its final approval, investors will be able to buy into the fund and participate by owning shares of Bitcoins. So this is very similar to a number of other exchange-traded funds that are on NASDAQ. IAU or GLD, both of those are exchange-traded funds that allow you to own shares of gold. And they supposedly, you know, track the exchange price of actual gold very closely. And they do correlate somewhat. Of course, the difference is when you own a gold bar and store it in your locker for 20 years, at the end of it, you still have a gold bar. Whereas at the end of 20 years, holding a bar full of exchange-traded funds, at the end of 20 years, you would own somewhat less than a gold bar because of all the fees that you're paying to the managers and to the the bureaucrats and the hangers-on and the finance people that are running the company that manage the gold ETF. Now, of course, you know, convenience comes at a cost. It's maybe a lot harder to store the gold yourself, and maybe at the end of 20 years, you open up your locker and you realize, uh-oh, where'd the gold bar go? Uh-oh, I haven't looked in the locker for the last 15 years. When I looked in the locker 15 years ago, the gold bar was there. Now the gold bar's not there anymore. I suppose the same thing could happen with an ETF. But the Winklevoss twins are going to have their... I hope they don't give it the ticker symbol W-I-N-K, Wink, like their Wink Dex, you know, the exchange index tracking Bitcoin, Wink Dex. I hope they don't give it the ticker symbol Wink. Please make it BTC or Bit or Bitcoin or something, not Wink.
You're listening to Paul Boyer's Mad Money Machine.
Also in the news this week, Congressman Stockman from Texas introduced a bill to change the tax status of Bitcoin. It's H.R. 4602, the Virtual Currency Tax Reform Act. And it says to change the tax status of virtual currencies from property to foreign currency. Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled, this act may be cited as the Virtual Currency Tax Reform Act. Section 2, Congressional Findings, says Congress finds that classifying virtual currencies as property subjects users to capital gains tax on any transaction using the virtual currency based on any gain or loss relative to the change in the virtual currency's value from the time of purchase. And Section 3 is definitions. It defines a virtual currency. Section 4, General Authorization, says the Internal Revenue Service shall treat virtual currencies as a foreign currency for federal tax purposes. Section 5, moratorium. For a period of 5 years following the date of the enactment of this act, the federal government shall not impose, assess, collect, or attempt to collect capital gains tax on virtual currencies. And 2, nothing in this act shall prevent, impair, or impede the operation of any government agency, authority, or instrumentality, whether of the federal government or of any state or political subdivision thereof, to enforce currently existing criminal, civil, and taxation statutes and regulations. And the effective date, the provisions in this act shall take effect at the beginning of the fiscal year following enactment, which would be nice. Enough of the news. Let's pull something out of the Mad Money Machine Bitcoin Tool Crib. Well, I had a couple tools lined up for this week. The one I'll get to in just a second is one I really like. The one I'll talk about right now is one that I'll have to revoke or rescind. I was going to talk about Bitty, which an article at CoinDesk talked about. It says the Bitty, B-I-T-Y, app sneaks iOS Bitcoin transactions under Apple's radar. And it's actually an iOS app in the Apple App Store for iPhones and iPads that allows you, yes indeed, to make a Bitcoin transaction. You can send Bitcoin, supposedly, through this app. I haven't tested it, fortunately, because just a couple hours after the CoinDesk article came out, Andreas M. Antonopoulos of blockchain.info, the security officer there, said, warning, do not use third-party apps to verify, to link to your accounts at blockchain.info. I mean, basically what you have to do in the app is you have to give the app your blockchain info credentials, according to Andreas in Antonopoulos in the warning. And I haven't confirmed that it's true, but I will take him at his word for now. And when I first looked at it, I thought, yeah, I really don't want to put any of my blockchain info, .info into this app, which is what caused me to hesitate doing it, and I guess I'm glad I did. So, Bitty is not the Madman Machine tool of the week. What is the Madman Machine tool of the week? It is a tool that I've been using ever since episode 1 of the newly crafted Madman Machine, going all the way back to December of 2013. It's a tool, it's not really Bitcoin related, but it is a great tool, and I'm using it right now. I'm actually looking at it right this second. It's an outliner tool. I've used outlines ever since the original IBM PC with the monochromatic display. I think I had one that was green on a black background, you know, green text. Looked like the Matrix, now that I think about it. Was it a CGA, or maybe I had the EGA display at the time? All character based, no graphics. Now, I had a tool back then that was an outliner, and I loved it. If I recall, it was the Brown Bag Outline or PC Outline, one of those tools. You really just keep your information all in one place. You can collapse it, expand it, have sublevels. Well, finally, there's one that's for the web, and it's Fargo.io, Fargo at Fargo.io, written by Dave Weiner, the inventor of podcasting, along with Adam Curry. He now has this outliner, which in the last week, I understand NPR has taken up using it for some of their blogs. I don't use it for blog. I just use it to keep my own information. Every show, I create a new outline, and I put all the sections in there, and I copy URL links into the subheadings, and it's a great way to organize my information. Just love it. Love outliners. I wish it worked better on iPhone. I mean, you can browse to the outline using your iPhone, but I wish there was a native app for it that would make it run better. Nonetheless, the price is right. Because just like the best things in life, Fargo at Fargo.io is free. Some people have said that's the shortest break between seasons of any show that's out there. Yeah, that's all right. You know, this season may go on for a long time, or may go on for 16 shows, and then we'll start season 3. I don't know. Part of it depends on the support level I get in the show. I am honored, first of all, that Madman Machine, when it first started out, was nominated as the best business podcast 3 years in a row. And I'm honored to have won the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast competition. Season 1 ended. Season 2 is now starting. I am asking for your support, not just your accolades. You can send bitcoins or PayPal fiat dollars to me. And I think what I'm going to do is anybody that sends over 100 millibits or a tenth of a bitcoin, if you make yourself non-anonymous, you can write a little note that I'll read out on the show, whether it's a birthday shout out or a shout out to somebody else, or just saying something about you, or maybe a short advertisement for your website or your service or something. I'll take that. I'll do it on the show. So I'm looking for your support in order to make the Mad Money Machine a viable operation going into the future. Now, thank goodness this business about broadcasting on KCAA radio is over. Let's Talk Bitcoin. I guess they didn't re-up their contract with KCAA and put all these Bitcoin shows on the AM radio station. And for me, that means I don't have to do exactly 54 minutes of a podcast every week. And also, the great thing is I'm moving it to Fridays, as you may know. Well, first thing about the 54-minute long show, you know, when I first did the Madman Machine, I did shows as short as 25 minutes, depending on what I had to say that week, or as long as 45 minutes in some cases. And I'm kind of expecting somewhere between 30 and 60 minutes, depending on what's going on that week. So it's the new no quota format of the Mad Money Machine. And I don't think anyone other than that one lady out in California was listening to KCAA radio, and she wasn't even interested in Bitcoin, but she was listening. And yes, I've changed the deadline for the show. You know, it was on Tuesdays out there in California. Well, I think for me, Fridays is going to be a better day, because that'll give me all week to work on things to put into the show. The Tuesday thing didn't work out so well for me because I'd have to work over the weekend. You know, I'd work Saturday, Sunday, and then, of course, Monday to get work on Monday to get the show ready for Tuesday. So I like the weekends off, too, and I prefer to release it on Friday, if you don't mind. I'd like to get it out by Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern time. That way, if you're in the office and you can download it on your iPhone, you can listen to it on your commute back home. Or you can have it for your lawn mowing or gardening or house cleaning on Saturdays and Sundays. Or you can have it ready for your Monday morning commute, if you like to do it that way. Or just relaxing. You know, I actually listen to some podcasts to put me to sleep. And it works great. The problem is I wake up and the podcast is over and I don't know where I left off. So I have to kind of rewind it. But some podcasts are really actually great for going to sleep with. I don't know about this one because I make so much noise in it and it wakes people back up. Anyway. This will be the season two, I think, is going to be new follow the money topics. Bitcoin, certainly. Cryptocurrencies, absolutely. Blockchain 2.0 stuff, yes. Investing in Bitcoin, of course. Investing principles. We'll cover all of these things in the Mad Money Machine. I'll continue to experiment on this show. And I'll continue to offend people. I'm not afraid to offend people. And even people who have donated money, quite frankly, I will offend. And I'll start with this episode. I will offend some of you right in this very episode. I've already offended some of you workers in the CTTSO, I suppose. And I'll continue to offend later in this episode. But I do need to defray expenses. I need significant donations, not just tips. And in that regard, I'd like to announce our very first Mad Money Machine Hall of Fame member, Jerry Liu from Herndon, Virginia. He writes in using BitPay, "Thank you for producing this wonderful show. Happy to be a part of this grand experiment. Nice talking to you at the Northern Virginia Bitcoin Meetup. Looking forward to seeing you again sometime." He sent 2.5 Bitcoin to help support the Mad Money Machine. Welcome to the Mad Money Machine Hall of Fame, Jerry Liu. Thank you so very much for your support. That is exactly the kind of support I'm looking for from listeners like you. Time now for Satoshi's Corner.
Satoshi no Corner.
Aha! You thought Satoshi's Corner was going to end with the reading of the white paper, didn't you? Bitcoin, a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. Well, it doesn't have to end because we have the mailing list of Satoshi's early emails available going all the way back to the 1st of November 2008 when he wrote, "I've been working on a new electronic cash system that's fully peer-to-peer with no trusted third party. The paper's available at bitcoin.org/bitcoin.pdf. The main properties are double spending is prevented with a peer-to-peer network. No mint or other trusted parties. Participants can be anonymous. New coins are made from hashcash style proof of work. And the proof of work for new coin generation also powers the network to prevent double spending." And he lists out the abstract of the paper. From the paper, and sends it off to the mailing list. Well, the very next day, a gentleman by the name of James A. Donald, Sunday, 2nd of November, 2008, wrote, he quotes Satoshi and saying he's been working on a new system with no trusted third party. And he said, James Donald says, we very, very much need a such a system. But the way I understand your proposal, it does not seem to scale to the required size. For transferable proof of work tokens to have valuable value, they must have monetary value. To have monetary value, they must be transferred within a very large network. For example, a file trading network akin to BitTorrent. To detect and reject a double spending event in a timely manner, one must have most past transactions of the coins in the transaction, which, naively implemented, requires each peer-to-peer to have most past transactions, or most past transactions that occurred recently. If hundreds of millions of people are doing transactions, that's a lot of bandwidth, and each must know all or a substantial part thereof. And very interesting critique that James Donald wrote there. Then on the next day, John Levine or Levine or Levin, Monday, 3rd of November, wrote, and he quotes here, he quotes from the paper, as long as honest nodes control the most CPU power on the network, they can generate the longest chain and outpace any attackers. And John writes, but they don't. Bad guys routinely control zombie farms of 100,000 machines or more. People I know who run a blacklist of spam sending zombies tell me they often see a million new zombies a day. This is the same reason that Hashcash can't work on today's internet. The good guys have vastly less computational firepower than the bad guys. I also have my doubts about other issues, but this one is a killer. Regards, John. And then Satoshi responded to the first one that said we very, very much need such a system, and that it couldn't scale. Satoshi writes, long before the network gets anywhere near as large as that, it would be safe for users to use simplified payment verification, which is in Section 8 of the paper, to check for double spending, which only requires having the chain of block headers, or about 12 kilobytes per day. Only people trying to create new coins would need to run network nodes. At first, most users would run network nodes, but as the network grows beyond a certain point, it would be left more and more to specialists with server farms of specialized hardware. A server farm would only need to have one node on the network, and the rest of the LAN interconnects with that one node. The bandwidth might not be as prohibitive as you think. A typical transaction would be about 400 bytes. That is, ECC is nicely compact. He says, each transaction has to be broadcast twice, so let's say 1 kilobyte per transaction. Visa processes 37 billion transactions, or processed it in 2008, or an average 100 million transactions per day. That many transactions would take 100 gigabytes of bandwidth, or the size of 12 DVD or 2 HD quality movies, or about $18 worth of bandwidth at current prices. If the network were to get that big, it would take several years, and by then, sending 2 HD movies over the internet would probably not seem like a big deal. Satoshi Nakamoto. Well, it's interesting here, reading this, because we've always talked about how, you know, Satoshi's original vision was everybody runs blockchain nodes, and everybody performs the proof of work, and it doesn't get centrally controlled. Well, here, he's actually sort of saying, yeah, it does get specialized. The mining of coins and the validating and the processing of the entire blockchain is handled by specialized people out on the nodes. So it's very interesting. And that is today's Satoshi's Corner. let's talk about what else is going on in Bitcoin land. You know, back in season one, we talked about how side chains are now replacing, the coolest thing. And who cares about Ethereum when we've got side chains now? Well, side chains are what, 2-3 months old or something? Tree chains are the new thing. Tree chains are replacing side chains. If you heard Peter Todd talk on Let's Talk Bitcoin episode a few episodes ago, he had a kind of a beef with side chains. He said, yeah, they work because of merged mining. And yeah, merged mining is basically free. I mean, if you're mining Bitcoin already, it's basically free to mine some other chain alongside of Bitcoin. Namecoin, for example, is merge mined right beside Bitcoin at the moment. Well, side chains would be merged mine as well. He said the only thing is it takes a little effort, extra effort to set it all up. And if he charges his client $100 an hour and it takes him an hour or two to set it up, then he should be able to make $100 or $200 to recoup his cost by the end of the year. And with Namecoin mining, you don't really make that much either anyway. So it's not worth the effort to set up merged mining. And I say, so what's a little effort, extra effort, if the reward, non-monetary reward, is so big? And that is the reward of having these alt chains running. You know, maybe it's not an altruistic, maybe it's not a coin reward, but it is an altruistic reward. And there was an article out at Stack Exchange that talked about how merge mining works. And if I were to boil it down to its simplest essence, I think you'll find that there is a tiny little amount of extra effort that is actually involved on the miner's part. But here's the way it basically works. It says the idea is that you assemble a Namecoin block, then you hash it. Then you insert that hash into a Bitcoin block. And then when you find the hash for the Bitcoin block, you not only get the mining reward for Bitcoin, but you also get the mining reward for Namecoin. Well, there's a much more detailed explanation of this. And if you're interested, I'll have the link to this Stack Exchange article on how does merged mining work. Add it to the show notes for this episode of the Mad Money Machine, which I guess I'm going to call SO2EO1, Season 2, Episode 1. In the parlance of some of the great BitTorrent sites. But are tree chains really the hottest thing that's out there? What about MadeSafe? You know, I mean, MadeSafe is really one of the hot things out there now. MAIDSAFE. And we've had some recent episodes on the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast network that talked about MadeSafe and interviewed the guys associated with the project. I think it's very interesting to build the internet from the ground up. Well, maybe not from the ground up. I mean, maybe the pavement is already laid and you're putting the MadeSafe building on top of the pavement that's already there for you. But what's happening here is that everything's encrypted and everything's decentralized. No more centralized servers and no more snooping of your content on the internet with MadeSafe. I think it's going to be very interesting to watch. Or is that the hot thing, or is Dark Market the hot project right now? This was the winner of the hackathon at one of the Bitcoin conferences that happened recently. Amir Taki and his gang prototyped a Dark Market, which is basically an eBay that's fully decentralized and mostly anonymous. I guess at some point you have to give away your address in the system in order to receive the product that's being shipped. Hopefully, there's a way to deal with the risks involved of giving away your identity. But some people thought, Dark Market could be used for good, not just evil. So why do we have to have such an evil name? And they'd like to rename Dark Market. One such person is our good buddy Brian Hoffman of the Northern Virginia Bitcoin Meetup Group, guy who heads those up. He has forked it or cloned it and calls it Open Bazaar, which I think is a pretty good idea. Well, Amir Taki says he's really focused not on finishing dark market at the moment, but he's more focused on finishing Dark Wallet, which is the anonymous Bitcoin wallet that's out there. And I think you can find that at darkwallet.is. And I think that's the URL for it. There is a lot of interesting things going on, not just Bitcoin, but Bitcoin and anonymity-related things on the internet. And we'll be following them very closely here on Season 2 of The Mad Money Machine.
Call The Mad Money Machine voicemail line at 571-366-7121.
Let's play a round of the world's favorite game, Guru Roulette. I've replaced the numbers on a roulette wheel with the names of Bitcoin gurus. I'll spin the wheel and roll the marble, and for the selected guru, give you a little background on their Bitcoin philosophy. So here we go. And the winner this time on Mad Money Machine Season 2, Episode 1 is Glenn Beck. Ah, see, I told you I'd offend some of you later in the show. Not that the Guru Roulette Wheel's rigged or anything. Glenn Beck needs no introduction. Famous radio personality, famous Fox News personality, and then famous radio personality. Head of TheBlaze.com, The Blaze Network. Well, you may have seen some of the goings-ons. He's been talking about Bitcoin. He had Jeffrey Tucker, Elizabeth Ploche of the Bitcoin Foundation, and Christoph Atlas, author of Anonymous Bitcoin, on his TV show recently. Now, actually, before that, on his radio show, Glenn Beck talked about how he went to San Francisco area and had a meeting with some of the top technology gurus, including the guys from Andreessen Horowitz, the investment venture capitalist firm. He came away quite impressed about Bitcoin and realized he doesn't really know much about it. But here's a little segment from the TV show where he interviewed those three people.
And the reason why I wanted to do this show is, and I hope this is just the beginning of a long relationship of trying to understand these things, America's either going to go into authoritarianism, the world is, authoritarianism, or it's going to be freer than it ever has been. And I'm counting on technology to empower people like they've never been able to.
At which point everybody there is nodding their heads up and down.
So if we just look at this chalkboard,
which they showed for a few seconds and then never really got back to it,
the only thing really is up at the top that I think we need to cover is you get rid of the banks, right?
Yeah.
You get rid of the Federal Reserve, all of the central banks.
Yes.
You get rid of all of the stuff we think we need now because of old technology. And it is...
the dollar is old technology. That's a good way to put it.
It's almost just a barter system, right?
Trustless peer-to-peer system, direct transfer of funds, no trust in one central point of failure.
So I talked to my kids when I came home from Silicon Valley, and I said, kids, I want you to understand. They're in their 20s. And I said, I want you to understand. Dad knows nothing on this. This is just my gut.
At which point I would say, hey, Glenn, you need to listen to The Mad Money Machine, especially Season 1, where we went through Satoshi's white paper.
But I'm taking some of my money and I'm investing in Bitcoin, and I recommend any money that you have, you put a reasonable amount in Bitcoin, because if it works, A, it will guarantee some freedom, and B, it won't collapse as a system collapses, and C, it will go up in value, correct?
Correct.
And so It's a risky, I guess, at this point, but it's almost like looking at Edison and going, I just saw this light bulb and I don't even know how that works yet. But I think if it works, it's going to be huge.
Well, now, Gavin Andreessen, former lead developer of the Bitcoin Foundation, wasn't there. But if he were, he would say, now, Glenn, hold on. Don't put any more into Bitcoin than you're afraid to lose, because the system is risky and it could, you know, it could go to zero. And just be very cautious. And, of course, learn how it all works. Learn how to secure your system if you're going to put it on your own system. Or, you know, learn what third-party systems that you can definitely trust with your Bitcoin.
And then the other side of that is, this is what my kids said to me. If I said I want to invest, $10,000 or $5,000, it's not the same as telling my 25-year-old kids, hey, $5,000. Mm. That's a lot of money.
Right.
They said, but what happens if it doesn't work? What happens if it goes down? And I said, well, then you lose your investment. There is no FDIC on this. But let me go to the flip side. In, I think it was Crete or Greece, where they said, we're going to start taking your savings.
Cyprus,
that's what it was.
Going into individuals' banking accounts.
And a lot of people put their money into Bitcoin, right?
Right, in April. That's why we had one of the major price bubbles that took place. But this is, again, a movement to give power to people around the world who can't depend on governments or even banks, protecting their funds.
Could we continue this conversation in greater detail and try to break this up? Because, I don't see anything being able to free man. There is a currency collapse possible, mm-hmm. Globally.
It could happen,
and it grows more and more likely every day. And I don't see anybody doing anything but grabbing power and saying, you'll use this. This is the only path that I see on towards freedom.
The other problem is the system as it exists is probably not going to be reformed to prevent
right.
it.
No,
we know this. The political elite are not interested in a gold standard.
I know they're not.
They're just not going
to
do it.
So I would love to be able to continue this conversation with you. I thank you guys so much for coming out.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Well, it has been very interesting watching the evolution of Glenn Beck from a hardcore Republican to a hardcore libertarian. And he's really on board with Bitcoin, and I think he really is generally interested in it. You know what he needs to do next? He needs to set up a BitPay account and put some links on his website and allow people to donate Bitcoin to him in order to support his Blaze network. Just like Mad Money Machine has a button on its webpage at madmoneymachine.com. Well, congratulations, Glenn Beck, and welcome to the Bitcoin community. You're the guru on Mad Money Machine Season 2, Episode 1. Let's take a minute to look at the market for millibits. Well, let's see. The Bitcoins have been trading in a pretty narrow range recently over the past 7 days. The high was 45.95, let's call it 46 cents per millibit. The low is 43 cents per millibit. I'd call that a narrow range. What about the 30-day range? The high, 54 cents, 55 maybe, let's call it. And the low, 42 cents on the millibit. If you look at a chart of it, we're kind of trending down. We've been trending downward from 30 days ago till about April 26th. And then it's just been bouncing along, bubbling along in the 42, 43 to 45 cent range. Of all this time. The total number of millibits in circulation, 12.76 billion. That brings us to a market cap of $5.7 billion for all the bitcoins in the world. When you're a miner and you find a block, you get $11,155.50 worth of bitcoin. And the average time between blocks, about 9.5 minutes. That's your Mad Money Machine Millibit Market Minute. Well, my goodness, even though I said this is the no quota format of the Mad Money Machine show, I guess I've really just gotten into a habit of doing 54 minutes, because that's where we are right now. We're about the 53 and a half minute mark on the Mad Money Machine clock. Well, I'm so happy to be back at season 2. I'm so thankful for you to support the show. It's great doing this. I have a lot of fun with it, and I hope to get some informative information out to you about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and all the anonymity features that are coming down the pipe to help us remain free on the internet. Thank you so much. This is Paul Boyer saying it takes money to make money, and it takes millibits to make a Mad Money Machine. I hope that you will buy some Bitcoin, spend some Bitcoin, donate some Bitcoin, and then replenish your Bitcoin. I do seek your support at the show. If you go to madmoneymachine.com, you'll see buttons off to the right. One goes to BitPay, one goes to PayPal. Can I ask a favor of you? If you like anything at all about the Mad Money Machine, would you tweet it and include @MadMoneyMachine in your tweet? to help others find the show. If we spread the word about Bitcoin, hey, the more people that buy Bitcoins, the more valuable yours become. Email me, bitcoin@madmoneymachine.com, and you can find me Facebook and Reddit as well at Mad Money Machine. Call the voicemail line and leave a message if you like, 571-366-7121. I'll see you next Friday. There's actually a lot of stuff that I didn't get to this week that I really wanted to get to. So I will see you Friday, May the 23rd at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on MadMoneyMachine.com or Let's Talk Bitcoin.com network. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.